Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and word of mouth. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz. Mike, you're back from Kenya.
Yes, I am.
Welcome back. So, what's one thing you learned?
Well, I learned that the area we were in was Maasai tribal areas, and those folks really depend on what's going on with their weather, with patterns, that kind of thing. So I hope to visit that in a future Science Bites or Local Talk program.
Okay, let's learn more. Science Bites, that's on Tuesdays at 4:30, and then replayed Saturdays at 10:30. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, the American goldfinch was named the Iowa State Bird on March 24th in 1933. And there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, this 25th day of March, 2022, and the 30th day of the war in Ukraine.
The weather forecast is windy and somewhat warmer today with a high of 52, and so windy, in fact, that we are under a statewide wind advisory for the entire day. A season low we'll expect tonight, the 28 degrees range, so another ideal maple sap running season this year. Maple syrup, or sap in trees, season thrives with warm conditions during the day, then back down to freezing each evening. Similar conditions the coming week with cooler temperatures in the 50s and with showers in the forecast for next week. So let's welcome Dennis Hart with a news summary of the week's news from the local papers.
The former principal at Ames High School speaks out for the first time. The Fairway store chain says it's still planning to put millions into a new rec center in Boone. And how about those Iowa State University men's and women's basketball teams? All made big news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that State House Republicans said they were not giving up on trying to pass legislation banning coronavirus vaccine mandates and capping damages in commercial vehicle lawsuits, in spite of a rare public defeat last week. That defeat came during floor debate, as lawmakers were asked to consider an amendment to a bill about vehicles with cosmetic damage. GOP leaders wanted to replace the entire text of that bill with language banning private employers from requiring workers to prove their coronavirus vaccine status, and with language involving commercial vehicle lawsuits. But a dozen Republicans voted against that, along with Democrats, and the measure failed on a 48-50 vote. It was the first time in years the majority party had lost a vote on the House floor. So Republican leaders deferred the bill, which allows them to consider it again in the future. The Trib also reported on the results of a new Des Moines Register poll, which showed that most Iowans oppose cuts to jobless insurance. 53% of respondents oppose proposed cuts to benefits for laid-off workers, while 38% favor the plan. A bill backed by Governor Reynolds in the legislature this year would decrease how long Iowans can receive weekly jobless benefits from 26 weeks to 16 weeks. That bill would also require claimants to wait a week before receiving money and require them to accept lower-paying job offers than the current law demands. And the Trib also had word that after nearly a decade in the Iowa State House, Representative Rob Bacon would not seek re-election this year. The Republican from Slater was first elected to the state Senate in 2010, then won a seat in the state House in 2012. Saturday's Trib reported that SciRide buses in Ames would have 5 electric buses by next year. SciRide already had bought 2 electric buses that will be delivered this June, but a new $3 million grant will allow the purchase of 3 more electric vehicles. They will replace 5 of SciRide's diesel buses, which have reached the end of their lifespans. SciRide operates 13 fixed routes with 90 buses. A bus usually needs to be replaced after a dozen years, but just 38 of the active buses were manufactured within the past 12 years. The new electric vehicles will run on 564 kilowatt-hour batteries, which could power a house for a full month. The Trib also reported on another new Des Moines Register poll, which showed that 2/3 of Iowans want lawmakers to ban motorists from holding cell phones or other electronic devices while they're driving. 70% of Iowa adults favor such a ban, 27% oppose the idea. Banning handheld cell phone use has majority support among Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. Iowa law already bans texting while driving. And there was word that the Goldfinch Room's Songwriter Showcase had received a $5,000 American Rescue Plan grant from the Iowa Arts Council. That grant was awarded to the Ames Community Arts Council, and in a partnership with Stevens Auditorium, the money is being used to help fund the Iowa Songwriter Showcases throughout the year. The Goldfinch Room is a venue offering an intimate setting for about 100 people on the lower level of Stevens Auditorium. Sunday's Trib reported that Republicans in the state legislature are shelving a proposal that would let parents sue school districts and add criminal penalties for teachers and administrators who distribute obscene materials or hardcore pornography to students. The bill failed to clear a key legislative deadline last Friday, meaning it's dead for the year. There are still numerous ways for Republicans to resurrect it, but party leaders in both the state House and Senate said they don't think criminal penalties will be part of their discussions going forward. Sunday's paper also updated the situation in Maxwell, which is now without a gas station in town for the first time in about 5 decades. The reason? Casey's convenience store is closed for good after 2 arson fires in the span of 3 days. Casey's had been a source of jobs and was a gathering spot for the community. Maxwell's mayor said the city is looking to create an economic development committee to bring a new gas station to the city and to learn what residents want from Maxwell. The mayor also hopes to attract food trucks for those who relied on Casey's prepared foods. In another story, the Trib reported that Fairway Stores has tweaked its business model and developed a plan for grocery stores in small communities. Fairway has opened 2 stores in small towns in the past year and is about to build a third. The Boone-based grocery store chain bought an existing store in Colfax last year, built a new site in Rockwell City, and plans to start building a new store in Ogden next month. And the Trib reported that an orchestra association in Ames will forge ahead with plans to promote cultural diplomacy between the United States and Russia, even as Russia makes war on Ukraine. And the head of the Ames International Orchestra Festival Association says that work might be more important than ever. It was established a half century ago to bring in classical orchestra musicians for performances and now exists as a volunteer support group, partnering with the Iowa State Center in Ames to ensure that orchestras from around the world continue to play at Stevens Auditorium. The Ames group received a $4,000 grant from the Iowa Humanities Project for a program called Cultural Diplomacy, Building Bridges of Understanding Between the U.S. and Russia. Tuesday's Trib reported that the Fairway food chain is still committed to donating $2 million to build a new recreation center in downtown Boone, in spite of the failure of a bond referendum on March 1st. Fairway Chief Executive Officer Reynolds Kramer said his company still has the same commitment to Boone to help it grow. He says he still thinks the rec center will be built, but the question is how it might get done. A $10 million rec center was planned for 628 Story Street in downtown Boone, but voters said no to the referendum. The Story Street site was the longtime location of a Fairway store. The Trib also reported that a Central Iowa library is just one of 50 in the United States to host a traveling exhibit that looks at how Americans responded to the Holocaust. The Marshalltown Library is the only one in the state to host the traveling exhibition from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C. It will be in Marshalltown tomorrow through May 6th. And, of course, the Trib had stories and pictures about both the Iowa State University men's and women's basketball teams, which have made their way to the Sweet 16 of the NCAA basketball tournament. The men's team will play Miami tonight, while the women's team will play Creighton, also tonight. Wednesday's paper reported that the former Ames High School principal, who was removed from the job last fall by the school district, had spoken in public about the circumstance of her departure. Valerie Nyberg was removed as principal last October, after 15 months on the job. The school district kept her employed as a researcher and grant writer, but she told the school board Monday night that she's resigning at the end of the school year because, in her words, "I no longer feel safe, nor do I feel heard in my current position." Nyberg said she was never given specifics about why she was removed, but her removal came after an Instagram video appeared to show she was being verbally and physically assaulted by someone in what looked to be a hallway at the high school. Nyberg said this past Monday that Ames High students recorded that video and the person involved was a student. She went on to say, in a letter she read to the school board, that children are hurting in the community, and she advocated that Ames have smaller alternative high school settings for students to earn their diplomas. She said there is no consistent intervention and support in school buildings. The Trib also reported on what school nurses in Iowa say they've learned from the coronavirus pandemic. They say their day-to-day work changed dramatically during the pandemic, as they became key players trying to interpret ever-changing guidance from federal, state, and local agencies when districts put together plans for in-person learning in the fall of 2020. Health and safety guidance differed from one district to the next. Yesterday's paper reported that the Burdex Manufacturing Company, which is based in the Netherlands, is locating its American headquarters in a vacant Ames facility. The company is expected to bring about 20 new jobs to the community. Burdex makes livestock trailers, and it will make three types of trailers in Ames. It will be located at 23959 580th Street, in an area recently annexed by Ames. The facility will be east of I-35 and just north of Highway 30. The Trib also reported that a more than $2.5 million tax increment financing agreement was delayed this past week over a contract clause that would have required yearly Ames City Council approval. That proposal would have brought 13 industrial lots on Dayton Avenue just north of 13th Street. The city and developer Chuck Winkleblack had been close to finalizing an agreement on the plan until Winkleblack became aware of the clause requiring the yearly council approval. And there was word that state lawmakers had passed a bill that would give Iowa's lieutenant governor the power to appoint a lieutenant governor of his or her own if they ascend to the role of governor. The proposal is a response to the confusion surrounding Iowa's gubernatorial process that arose in 2017 when then-Governor Terry Branstad resigned to become ambassador to China. Under the new plan, if Iowa's governor dies, resigns, or is removed from office, the lieutenant governor will become governor for the remainder of the term. But it's not a done deal. Constitutional amendments, which this would be, must receive approval from both legislative chambers in two consecutive two-year general assemblies. So lawmakers would need to approve it again next year, or in 2024, before it could go on the ballot for Iowans to vote on in November 2024. And that is your summary of quite a week of news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, planning to take this first full weekend of spring off, then planning to spring right back here into this same virtual seat on Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what's been making news around the state. I hope you'll be here as well, and I hope we both have a great weekend.
Before guests and TV, before people and cars, it's evening.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News. And the music interlude was Pieta Brown in a Mark Knopfler song, Before Gas and TV, from her album Paradise Outlaw. On East Lincoln Way, have you noticed a food plaza or community food park? Here's a story about this new destination in Ames. Zaid Gustafson from Community Choice Credit Union.
Yes, sir.
Here on Lincoln Way, East Lincoln Way in Ames. Is this your corporate office?
That is our Ames branch that is next to the food truck park. Our corporate headquarters would be in Johnston, and we're all around the Des Moines area. That Ames branch is our farthest away from us.
Sure. I guess as a point of reference, I'm a member of the Community Choice Credit Union from my work with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So,
and we thank you for that.
Well, yeah, I always appreciate your service. But I notice a food court next to the Community Choice Credit Union here on East Lincoln Way. And I'm curious about that. Is that something new?
Yes, it went into construction, I believe, last May, and we got it finished around November this year, so we had a soft opening for it, and we had an event. We had about 7 trucks there, I think, and played an Iowa State game on a 27-foot Jumbotron TV, and it was nice up until in the afternoon, then it got a little cold and rainy. But
It was
November. We wish it was a little earlier, but you know how things go, and kept getting pushed back, but yeah, so far so well, and trying to get our name out there and get trucks to apply and get people in the park.
So the parking area just to the west of the Community Choice Credit Union, and what is your address?
It is 202 East Lincoln Way.
202 East Lincoln Way. Did you have to buy that area, or is that part of your property?
Once the Ames branch was purchased, it was a part of it. It was an old motel that was just kind of sitting there. And so once it was taken down, it was just an empty parking lot that we thought, since we have it, we might as well do something creative with it.
Oh, that's good.
First food truck park in Iowa.
That's exactly where you're kind of repurposing a space and yet putting it to good function. That's hard to get too much of that. So.
Exactly.
Okay. How many stalls, or you say there were 7, was that your maximum?
So outside of events that we put on, just like the regular every day, there are 4 stalls there, 2 of them with running water and all 4 with power. And we don't charge for the power nor any rent for them to be there. So just any given day, there could be 1 to 4 trucks there. If we are hosting an event that is for the public, we can have more because it's a parking lot attached to it, so we can fit more trucks or trailers there. Plus, we have an alleyway and then the parking lot of our branch as well. So
you've got some growth potential.
Yes, sir, we do.
So you had 7. Did that surprise you, or how many food trucks are in Ames? How would a person contact all the food trucks?
So we do a lot of it based on social media, Facebook, or just Google. And I personally will reach out to trucks via Facebook, and then I will get their emails just to kind of see if they have any interest in being there. I always add that it's free, and we just kind of want to support local businesses. Also, we had people reach out to us as well. We have a website, and then we also have a Facebook presence. And then we also have people that come in to the branch, and we'll ask about it, and they get directed to me. So
let's include that contact here, and then I'll repeat it at the end. If someone wanted to contact you about your food truck patio?
Park. We always call it food truck park.
Park. Food truck park. Okay.
So if they wanted to contact, they could reach out to our Facebook, or we have a website that is food truck park, and then it's spelled PARC.com. And on there, we have a way for them to click a link, and it brings them through the application process, which is just a few forms just to make things legal for our benefit and for theirs. And then, yeah, it's free to apply and free to be there, and then they'll get a scheduling platform where they're able to pick and choose what stall they want to be at and what dates they want to be there.
Did you create this concept? Are there other food truck parks in Iowa?
I wish I could take the credit for it, but We were the first food truck park in Iowa, and this was all a concept from our CEO. And it's just because we like to do things that are very unique and out of the ordinary, I guess. And so we saw in the community that Ames, they don't license food trucks unless you're on private property. So we kind of thought this would be a benefit for the Ames community and small and food trucks and small businesses to get somewhere to park and then not charge them and try to help them out because they'll be helping us. But there's plenty of food truck parks all over the country.
Okay. I don't get out that much, I guess. But I have noticed on a recent trip to Arizona that there were a lot of food trucks in Tucson, and I realized it was a lot more interesting for me to go to the food truck than try to figure out a restaurant or, you know, what was available. And they were very handy, and the food is really, really good. They really try to excel on the business formula, if you will, that if you put out a good product, people will find you.
I've found that a lot of the food truck owners, I would say all of them, are very prideful in their craft. They really take a lot of pride in what they can make, and it's always very good stuff.
Yeah. And one of our brands here at Community Radio is strengthening community. And it sounds like you have adopted some of that philosophy in your food truck park.
Yes, sir.
Okay, will you be, like all of us, waiting for warmer weather, but is there any sort of opening planned in the coming weeks?
So we do. On May 21st, we're planning on having a grand opening, I guess. Since our one in November was sort of a soft opening, we want to have like a spring kickoff event, and hopefully the weather will be nice enough to have this go on, but we're planning on having at least 8 trucks there, hopefully more. And games and things going on, we're still kind of nailing out some details, but we know the date and a couple things. But we would love, you know, for the community to be there, and of course it's free for everybody to come. It's free for the food trucks to be there, and just kind of want to get as many people there as we can. Get recognition for the park, for the food truck.
You mentioned a Jumbotron for a football game.
Yes, sir.
That's intriguing to me because it's quite a community service right there. Will that be part of the food park for game days and those type of gatherings?
In the future, we will probably do stuff when it comes to watch parties for football games or sporting events, with especially Iowa State since it's Ames. And that's something that's on the table again. And it is something we rented, but hopefully we can do it again with warmer weather, not in November. And maybe we can do stuff with Iowa State games and whatnot.
You did mention May 21st, but will trucks be able to go there before that?
Yes. We have trucks there every week. Once they're approved, we put them onto our website, and people are able to see what trucks are approved there. So there are trucks that are approved right now that are scheduling time out, and we have at least 2 trucks there every week so far. And we put out a schedule on Facebook every week, beginning of every week, to tell who's there. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so once the weather keeps getting nicer, I anticipate more and more trucks wanting to be there.
Oh, I think so, too. And that's kind of why I was hoping to get this covered now that we're in the throes of early spring. But we all know what's coming next. Well, Zaid Gustafson, I really want to thank you and Community Choice Credit Union for your community-minded spirit here and fulfilling a niche that's new to people's eating habits, and yet what a great opportunity you present to the people of Ames come lunchtime. Is there anything I've overlooked that you would like to include?
I don't think so. This was great. And thank you so much for having us and for wanting to do this piece on us.
Okay, well, thank you, Zaid Gustafson with the Community Choice Credit Union. For more information, contact foodtruckpark.com. And that's Food Truck Park with a C instead of the K on park. So Food Truck Park for Community Choice. So let's have a music break and we'll return.
Oh, my rain, oh, my snow, all my sun, all my gold. All my weeks, all my days, all the lands, all all these laces round my knees. All my cars, all my wheels, all these devils at my heels.
Pieta Brown, All My Rain. It is 7:29 on your Friday. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. And I'm your host for the hour, Pat Schlarbaum, with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Susan Guiasta, Public Information Officer with the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Good morning. Hello, hello.
Oh, well, that's a good way to start a Friday.
Well, we're getting a little early, too, so that's just fine. So welcome. Do you have any announcements for the city, please?
Sure. Well, one of the first signs of spring in the City of Ames is always the annual hydrant flushing. Hydrant flushing happens every March, and it's a way that we go around and check over 3,000 fire hydrants across the community to flush out any mineral deposits, but also ensure that they're functioning correctly. And when doing that flushing, it is possible to stir up naturally occurring minerals in the water mains. So residents nearby can experience discolored or rusty water, and that's not dangerous, it's not a problem, but you don't want to use that to do your laundry because it can stain. So if you notice discolored water, just run the cold water tap for about 5 minutes or so until the water runs clear. Don't run your hot water, that'll draw it into your water heater. So run your cold water tap just till the water's clear. And, you know, it's not a safety concern, but most people don't care for the discoloration. And, of course, they don't want the staining.
Sure, sure. Well, we have beautiful water source here at Ames, and we want to keep it that way. So thanks for all your efforts at keeping things.
Yeah, you know, I was recently traveling, and I have to tell you, you really don't appreciate your great water and great water sources until you travel other places and you think, how does water just taste off? Or it smells funny? I mean, you know, I have great faith in tap water around the United States, but I do know that there's a range of taste and odor, and honestly, we just have the best water here. It's just fantastic.
Let's welcome and thank Neil Weiss, the Assistant Water and Pollution Control Director.
Yeah, good morning. That's a,
good
that's
morning.
A great introduction for the water department, the wastewater department.
Well, we're not blowing smoke. It's clean water that we all cherish. So thank you for all your efforts, Neil.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
So this morning, I just want to touch on a few of our upcoming projects that we have in our department. So I think last time I was on, I mentioned a new well field project that we're still working on completing design for. We're still hoping that that project could start construction later this summer. So we're dealing with a lot of material shortages and increased lead times, a lot of projects just across the country right now. And one of those projects are trying to get some of that water pipe for a well line project like that. So we're still hoping that we'll see some construction later this summer with that project. But another project we'll starting is the demolition of our old water plant located at 300 East 5th Street. So that was a promise that we made to that neighborhood. Once we did move everyone to the new water plant site, we were going to demolish that plant so it didn't become an eyesore in the community. Certain things can certainly dilapidate pretty fast with no one being in there and operating that plant anymore. So we want to do our part to turn that into a green space that people can enjoy. So that project is, or will involve a lot of upgrades to a lot of the water piping on that site. Mm-hmm. That's what we're currently working on finishing the design for. And
Neil, you might want to explain that the office part will still be standing. It's just the water plant part that will be coming down.
Yes, that's a good point, Susan. Yeah. So that facility there houses our water meter division on the north side and our laboratory services division. So the old water plant structure is just located on the south side of that complex. And like Susan mentioned, that's the portion of that building that will be coming down. And once we do demolish that, we will be planning on doing an addition to that building on the north side, adding some more conference room space, some garage space for our other two divisions that are currently housed there.
Well, I'm really intrigued when you mention open spaces. So there'll be an amenity for that neighborhood at that site?
We don't exactly have plans for what we're going to do with some of that green space in the future, but it will remain as a green space for City of Ames property. Still looking at plans on what exactly that we'll want to move forward with doing in the future there. So it's...
Yeah, help me out here. Is it an acre or so, a couple acres, or...
The green space area will be just over an acre.
Oh, yeah.
So it's... Yeah, and certainly there's the building that takes up most of that space right now will be gone, but there will be a new addition added in that space of that old water plant site.
Mm-hmm.
So there's... Yeah, there'll certainly be some more green space there in the future, though. So as part of this project,
Well, I was just going to say, you know, that's somewhat adjacent to Banshell Park, and we know that a lot of people use that park. There's a lot of dog walkers in the area, and the green space certainly would be used. There is a park already in the existing area, so it wouldn't be like a park, but I think the idea would be that it would be undeveloped. Neil, what's going to happen to the parking lot? Will that stay?
So the parking lot will stay. We're looking at additions of additional parking, probably on the west side of the existing building. So since there will be a conference room space there that City of Ames staff will be able to use, we'd certainly like to add additional parking to that site as well. The one thing that we've been working on with this project too is how can we be sustainable in demolishing this structure. So we've incorporated a number of different things into design to do that. And one thing is to recycle and reuse as much material as possible. So we have a goal of trying to recycle 90% of all the demolished materials with that existing structure.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's always appropriate to repurpose. And thank you for your efforts in, along those lines. And not to derail where you're going with all of this, but Susan mentioned the quality of her water. Is there like a national competition, if you will, or an assessment that you're a part of on a national level to in the water quality that you provide us?
Yes, that's a great question. So yearly, there's actually a competition with the Iowa AWWA, the Iowa Water Association. So we, City of Ames, has entered into that every year. We've actually have won that competition multiple times over the last 10 years. Yeah. So if you do win that Iowa competition, then it does move to the national conference, which does move around each year. Ames has not won that national conference yet, but it's just been a pleasure to even be entered into that competition. That's certainly a great question.
Yeah.
It would be neat to be on the national stage for that.
Yeah, we'll be pulling for you. But what would contribute to our water quality, do you feel? Is it what's in the aquifer when they talk about the Jordan Aquifer? Or how have you ever speculated on how is it that we're so fortunate to have such a good water source here in Ames?
Yeah, that's great. I think it really does start with that water in the aquifer and that water that we're pulling to the water treatment plant to then treat further. But we are very lucky here in Ames to have a groundwater source of all of our water. So it's already going through that natural filtration process down through all the different layers until it gets to the aquifer before we are even pulling from the aquifer and then treating it further. So there's other communities that use surface water as their source water for their water plant. So when using that surface water, you can run into a lot of issues with the nitrogen, phosphorus, the nutrients that are in the water from runoff upstream. So when we talk about water quality, one thing that really shows that there's a great water quality is a low amount of nutrients in that source water. And in Ames here, there actually is a no detect of nitrogen, total nitrogen in our source water. So that prevents us from having to do further treatment and spend more money to treat the water than some of these surface water plants. So it really goes back to our source water, our Ames aquifer here, being just a great, great source of water for us. And that's really where the water quality starts. But it certainly doesn't end there in the lime softening process that happens at our water treatment plant. Really just furthers that into a greater quality of water for our residents.
I'm sure you were comparing in the new water treatment facility there on 13th Street. Did you notice an improvement? Or just out of curiosity, were there things that you had that were benefited the new water source as compared to the older one?
Well, with the new water plant, our goal is to really not change anything. We wanted to keep the same great taste, same clean water that we were producing at the old water plant facility. With that being said, that we kept the same source water as well, so nothing changed there as far as where we're pulling from the water with all of our different wells across the community. So as far as water quality, water taste, all those aspects essentially have stayed the same. And we were already at a point of that clean, great tasting water, and that's something we certainly didn't want to change the recipe for.
We hear a lot about
that. If you can go back, if you could go back in time, if you remember when we were making plans for the new water plant, that was actually a huge community concern. They wanted no change, so we were kind of playing around with the idea of same recipe,
yeah.
same result, because, again, we reused a lot of the infrastructure for the new plant. So we had to assure people nothing was going to change. The process wasn't going to change. The water source wasn't going to change. So in theory, you shouldn't have noticed the difference. It should have continued the same fantastic quality if you lived in Ames 10 years ago versus now.
Okay, really good point. Thanks for including that, Susan. And I do remember that, as a matter of fact. Well, we hear a lot about denitrification in the Des Moines water system coming down the Raccoon River. Is that in your purview, or does the new facility have that ability, or where are we at with denitrification?
Yeah, looking at our water pollution control facility on the other end of the pipe, that is something where we'd be looking at treating that water and nitrifying and then denitrifying. So it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's a major project starting for our water pollution control facility. So currently that facility does not denitrify. It does nitrify, but as far as the activated sludge process of denitrification, it currently is not designed for that. So with the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, there will be more limits on the amount of nutrients that we put out of that facility. So over the next 20 years, we'll be upgrading that facility to be able to do denitrification. And phase one of that very large project will be starting in July of this year. So that's certainly a real exciting project for our department, for our community. It will essentially be a brand new treatment process that we will put in place, you know, over three different phases over that 20 years.
I see.
We're currently looking at all these different technologies. They're all based around biological nutrient reduction, activated sludge process. There have been some newer technologies that have shown up in the last 10 years in the U.S. So we're actually be doing some plant tours coming up here over the next month to really learn about some of these new technologies and get a good understanding of what we want to do moving forward before we make that choice.
I see you've got an open house coming up.
We do. Thank you for mentioning that. We'd like to invite everyone to come join us at that open house. It will be on April 23rd. It's a Saturday. We'll start from 10 a.m. and go until 2 p.m. We'll be giving tours that whole time. There'll be a number of different booths there with a lot of the different partners that we collaborate with. So there'll be a kids' corner. There'll be some giveaways. We've ordered a bunch of sustainability items that we're hoping to raffle off. So it'd be a great time, hopefully, hoping for nice weather. Again, April 23rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
And, Susan, I understand we're going to be hosting the Earth Appreciation Day on that day also. So that's a nice link to the environment right there.
Very busy day. Earth and the Airways, we're making plans to have that again. And we'll have an opportunity to highlight and showcase city and university sustainability programs and services. So looking forward to that opportunity as well. So a lot happening around Earth Day, April 22nd. In fact, so much is happening that our sustainability coordinator, Mary Rankin, likes to refer to it as Earth Month. So much is going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a bit of Earth Appreciation Day every day. But hopefully, Neil, we can have one of your, we can pre-record and then broadcast some of your discussion. For people that want to do both, we can learn about all your clean water initiatives and then also go visit your beautiful facility there on 13th Street. Well, is there anything else, folks?
I just want to encourage people to go check out our
Absolutely, yes. Yes, encourage everybody to go to the open house. Also, a couple other related events in April. People like to know this early. April 30th is Stash the Trash. There's also a stream water cleanup, and it is No Charge Yard Waste Day. So April 30th is our those events. April 23rd is the water plant open house, and I'm sure I'll have more things to populate our April calendar.
Yeah, it's sure going to be. We're all looking forward to April now, and maybe a little snow shower later today, but it's only temporary. Spring is going to spring upon us. Well, thank you so much. Susan Guiasta, Public Information Officer with the City of Ames, and Neil Weiss, our Assistant Water and Pollution Control Director. Thank you so much, folks. Have a good weekend. Thank you. Okay. Listening to Pieta Brown in recognition of Women's History Month. Pieta Brown, daughter to longtime Iowa artist Greg Brown. And that was Little Swainson's, an instrumental. And in Pieta's words, was written for a rehabilitated Swainson's hawk that she visited at the McBride Raptor Center outside of Solon, Iowa. And the hawk's story is too long to tell here, but I am proud to have made this instrumental with David Mansfield. Swainson's Hawks from Argentina will be moving through Iowa. Hey, Mike Havlik, welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you, Pat. Good morning.
Yes, good morning to you. And you're a man that probably knows about Swainson's Hawks.
Love Swainson's Hawks. It's a great success story with a monocrotophus that was being sprayed down in Argentina in the late 90s and finding out how they, until then, people didn't really know where they migrated to.
Yeah.
Find out where the problem was happening and then to have government step up and local citizens and do something about it. And Seba Geigy helped out with that too. So working with the chemical companies and instead of fighting them, working together.
Yeah, they kind of kettle together, and you see them over prairie burn areas quite often in the spring.
Yes, and we see them when people are chisel plowing, too, which I think is hilarious because chisel plowing and prairie fires look the same, and they have the same result as injured walking wounded, and the Swainson's hawk get the same result. They get an easy meal. So I think that shows how adaptable they are.
They go after those mice. They sure do. Hey, but yeah. Mike, I consider you an osprey steward extraordinaire. And the ospreys, let's talk about ospreys here a little bit this morning.
Thank you for those words, but I am standing on the shoulders of giants. You guys are the ones that brought them back here, and I am just reaping the benefits of what you guys did here. I sort of had them land in my lap here in Dallas County, and we're trying to weave our own success stories here and working with kestrels and working with barn owls. And in 2019, it was Stephanie Shepherd who called me and said, hey, we have ospreys on a cell phone tower out by one of your elementary schools. And we went out there, and lo and behold, they went out there in 2019, and we watched them, and they just played house that first year. Then in 2020, with the pandemic, everything shut down, they quietly raised two young. And the beauty of what we're doing here is I would love to go out and watch them every day. I'd like to go and look at their behavior and what they're, you know, where they're catching their fish. And I don't have that kind of time. And so one of the beauties of all these creatures coming back is we can be instruments of change. And so what I've really tried to do here is get the community involved and have locals monitor them. I have a couple of folks that are monitoring who are are turning into bird lovers, but before that, they're just kind of on the sidelines, sort of interested. And then as they waded into those waters, they got into the deep end. And I've got a couple that are just super champions of the osprey, and they're texting me, sending me pictures every day, and they've got names for them. That's been an exciting part. The other really exciting part of that is that cell phone tower is at Woodland Hills Elementary at Waukee School, and I've had fourth or fifth grade students monitoring them every year. So how would you like to be a 10 or 11-year-old child and have that story going on in your playground so you can watch every morning before school and after school and during recess, and the neighborhood's buzzing about it, the teachers are all buzzing about it, the office manager, everyone who comes in and out of that building from other, you know, AEAs or the people who do, you know, HVAC in those buildings, they all carry binoculars now. So I think it was your words that said, you know, when we bring them in, let them spin their own magic. Well, they certainly have spun their magic in that neighborhood.
Well, you're a naturalist with the Dallas County Conservation Board. We're talking about a nesting pair that's in far western Dallas County, just kind of in West Des Moines.
Yes.
So it's a suburb, a new school, a neighborhood that's kind of congealing together around these ospreys that are, lo and behold, kind of right in the middle of thick of things. And what they're up about 300 feet?
300 feet. I looked that up last year just because I wanted to get an accurate, yeah. And to me, and this is, again, a lesson that I have, apparently I haven't learned the lesson because it keeps coming back again and again and again. I know we brought osprey back here because of water quality. And, you know, certainly they have to catch fish. They have to be able to see fish. The fish have to be healthy enough that they can raise young. I mean, in my imagination, that would mean 1,600 acres of wetland nearby and water that's 8 feet deep with clarity. And these fish have moved into the suburbs. I mean, there's nothing natural. They're on a 300-foot cell phone tower. They're fishing from the quarries that are around there, and also a lot of the little, you know, ponds that the retention ponds, like at Wells Fargo. And I know we don't have a camera on this one, but I know from looking at the camera at the Wells Fargo pair, about every fifth day they show up with a koi, probably taken from Jordan Creek Mall. So to me, it is like, wow, they have figured it out. They've adapted, and they're sitting in the middle of suburbia, fishing out of unnatural waters and taking unnatural fish, and somehow they've made it. 2020 they raised two females, and 2021 they raised one female. So they are successfully nesting in something that doesn't look anything like I thought it would look, but they figured it out.
So we're talking about the fishing raptor, almost as big as an eagle, but considerably less pounds, only weigh about 3 pounds. But they are nesting around Iowa. Mike Metz has a question, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Mike. This is Mike.
Hi,
Metz.
Mike.
Yeah. Reports are coming in that they're starting to enter the state through the migration. Have you seen any yet, any of the ospreys?
No, but I was thinking this morning as I'm driving here, March 25th, that today is the first day that students at Woodland Hills saw them in 2020 and 2021. So there's, it's no accident we're talking about this today.
Yeah, so any moment now, huh?
Yes, maybe this afternoon.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, there was nesting originally back in 2003. It's been trending upward. I think in like 2017, there were 25. And some of those nesting pairs kind of, you know, they're just getting started. So some fall away. But I was really encouraged to read recently that last year, there were 49 nesting pairs, of which 45 had really confident observations. And of those 45, you mentioned a lot of starting where they're not successful, but there were 29 active successful pairings that produced 26 young last year. And I know when people were following the Osprey Project, and there was bringing ospreys from Minnesota and Wisconsin, I think 20 was the most that were ever brought here as young birds to try to get this osprey nesting started. So now natural reproduction is exceeding what was kind of got things started back in the early 2000s.
We've got another pair that tried to nest just south of Yale on a, it's not a cell tower, it's a smaller tower, but they tried to build a nest over a hole that was on this platform, and they made it out of corn stalks. So again, I think it's probably, you know, first year birds playing house.
Yeah.
But I've got two more volunteers who've stepped up and said they will monitor that site. So I'm waiting to hear if this year they're a little more robust and take a better shot at it.
Well, Mike Hovlick, what's it going to mean to you to see an osprey here in the coming days?
It just brings joy to my heart. I know the hard work that you guys did, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s. And I've just recently done a thing where I went and asked our elders, you know, how do you survive working in wildlife and in nature? And because there's a lot of stark truths that are out there, and a lot of times that weighs on our heart. And the thing I heard over and over and over from these elders was, wrap yourself in a success story. And as a lot of times we hear the word environment, it can have a negative or sad note to it. To me, seeing that osprey come back is a true success story. And so, you know, showing that to four classes of 25 children and have them involved in it, have their parents involved in it, have the neighborhood. This is a neighborhood Facebook page. I'm not on Facebook, but they're trying to have that whole little community buzzing about it. It's just, it fills me with joy, gives me hope for the future.
Keep looking up, young man, and thank you for all the things that the Department of Natural Resources was able to spearhead, but they were just kind of the go-betweens. It's really people like yourself and those fourth graders in West Dallas County that are going to make this thing move forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks for all you do for conservation. Mike Hovlick, Dallas County Conservation Board naturalist. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOY is streaming live at khoifm.org. And hit that play button. And while you're at that website, please remember to support this station financially. When you go to that website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guest, Zade Gustafson, Community Choice Credit Union. And as always, Susan Guiazda with the City of Ames, Neil Weiss, Assistant Water and Pollution Control Director, and Mike Hovlick, naturalist and osprey steward extraordinaire with the Dallas County Conservation Board. I have been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Pieta Brown, Before Gas and TV, All My Rain, and Little Swainsons. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And Adagio at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.
This is KHOI Story City, and